My name is Stephanie Belcher.
And I'm Del Belcher, and welcome to...
Two Peas in a Podcast.
A relationship show where two people
like each other
very, very much.
They do.
They it's do true. Like each other.
Yay!
They love each other.
Intro.
Stephanie.
We talked about
intro.
It.
Intro. Listen, this is the hot place where I get all my deets on the new reality television shows, and I am very upset. A few weeks ago, we had a very raucous, joyous celebration of the new show.
Paradise Hotel.
Paradise! And it's been canceled!
I know.
So mad.
Americans just can't get behind this train wreck of a show like they should.
And it's too... They just hung on. Here's the what the critics are saying.
I think they debuted it at the wrong time.
Well, the critics are saying that Americans just aren't into that watch as it happens. Like, Love Island was on like 6 days a week, and Paradise Hotel is on 3 days a week. And they were like, it's going to be in real time, live time, blah, blah, blah. And it basically bombed, I think, because it was on like a major network. If it was on a TBS, Actors Welcome. TNT.
I think it still needs to be the once a week format with an update.
Yeah.
People can do that. People aren't really good at the live time thing.
But babe.
Okay, Del, open your can in 3, 2, 1. It was giving me such anxiety seeing you almost open it.
Got to get my LaCroix. Anyway, super bummed. Really upset about that. They were kind of cramming together some of the last few episodes to make some longer extended episodes. And I'm very upset.
Yep.
But you know what makes me very happy?
What makes you happy?
Aldi customer service.
Oh, yes.
Remember, so last week we talked about Aldi port patio furniture.
Yes.
And we had some big gusts of wind, and it blew over the umbrella, and the umbrella broke. Very sad. So I took the umbrella back, and I did not have the receipt, but they did not have any other umbrellas. So they said, well, you can have a store credit. And I said, cool. But then they said, oh, wait, we called this other store, and they have one, and we're going to get it shipped here for you.
So they, Aldi,
they were incredible.
Went out of their way for a return and
they
out
did.
Of their way to ship it to you.
They did. It was so sweet and kind. And I am, it kind of rectifies almost everything that happened with Paradise Hotel.
Well, the deck felt like a big deal for us because it was the last thing that felt like it needed to be done for the house. And we spent a lot of money on it, invested a lot of time, and then having this patio furniture for Del felt like this wonderful accomplishment.
It's like my outside fortress.
So when the umbrella broke, on some level, it's just an umbrella. It's just a thing, but it made you really sad.
Let me apologize. I was kind of a dick. It broke. You're like, what happened? I was like, I can't tell you. I have to show you.
Yeah.
And you were like, well, I'm busy. And I'm like, well, I don't want to talk about it. So I will go on record saying I apologize.
Well, I understood why it was important to you, and so I wasn't really upset. But we talked about different ideas for how to fix it, and I was like, well, let's see if Aldi will take it back. So the fact that they did.
No receipt, no nothing. And they were like, yeah, sure,
we
do
shut there every single
the guy,
week, and we
like,
have for 7 years.
Yeah,
so.
The guy, the clerk fella that I was talking
was
to.
Was it Thor?
No, it was not Thor. It was Aziz. I think this is his name. Nasir. He said,
I don't know if I've seen him.
He said to his manager, he's like, oh yeah, this guy, I remember him.
Yeah.
They bought a lot of furniture last
week. Oh, that guy. Was he the guy that helped check us out?
Uh-huh.
Oh, he did not seem to like us that day. I think he had a bad day.
He liked me today. He was
good.
And I noticed on his name tag that it said, like in Dutch, it said, I speak Dutch.
Oh, that's amazing.
And so I said, Nasir, do you really speak Dutch?
That's cool.
And he was like, well, not really. But he said, I can understand it.
Yeah.
And first of all, I'm wondering, how do you know this? But then I said, so like if someone came in and Dutch was like, where are the bananas? You could be like, point them in the right direction.
Yeah, I guess because in a grocery store, it's probably limited on things you'd need.
Mm-hmm.
So
Aldi's very efficient. So
lots
of good things. Anyway, Stephanie, why are we here?
So this is Two Peas in a Podcast. It's a relationship
mm-hmm.
show from two people that like each other very, very much.
Mm-hmm.
Second part of our show is The Split, where we take a relationship article torn from the headlines and talk about it. This week, my article is about social class. Whoa. But more importantly, everything you've ever thought about overconfident people. So, little
everyone
teaser for that.
Everyone who's super rich thinks they know everything.
Don't ruin it for me.
I was just throwing out a stereotype, so I'm sorry.
And then in the first part of the show, Del is going to do Better Half, where he talks about the better half of a famous person.
The better half of a famous person, historical figure. Before I get to that, a little bit of housekeeping. Again, we
housekeeping.
Are two pieces in a podcast. If you haven't, please do us a huge favor of love and go rate us and review us on iTunes. Download us and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, and be free. You are free to like us on Facebook at facebook.com/peapodcast.
I had one more little thought.
What?
Last week we talked about emotional intelligence and gave practical tips for if there's something you need to get better at, try it.
Mm-hmm.
So this week when I've been feeling emotionally intense, I've been trying the breathe for 10 seconds thing.
Ooh.
And I did better most of the time this week, I think. However, it was interesting because there's that joke in the Christian community, if you've had a rough week, that someone must have prayed for patience for you.
Yeah,
so that must have happened. So thanks to whoever was listening.
Someone listening was like, oh dear Jesus, give Stephanie patience.
So I don't remember what the theory is, but there's a theory that if you're trying to not eat sweets or something, you have a limited number of times you can be tempted before it just breaks you by the end of the day.
Yeah.
Yeah. So after Thursday, I think I was just at a point where I had taken so many 10-second breaths. Then I think I was like, I just need a little breather. So thankfully the weekend came. But overall, I did better.
Well,
but there seemed to be a lot more this week.
I would say your emotional intelligence was a solid B+.
Thank you, baby.
You're
I'll
welcome.
Take a B+. That's
You're
not bad.
Welcome.
Yeah.
Not everybody gets an A.
Yeah.
All the time.
Well, they shouldn't. The point of having several lever grades if everyone's getting the same one?
Well, you're on your... It's basically your grade to lose. Everyone starts at an A+. So...
That's fair.
Okay. So,
yeah. So better half.
Better
me.
Half.
Half me.
Half me. This week is a good one.
Okay.
This week is a good one. Better half. So yes, we look into the story of a famous person's historical person's better half, significant other. This week we're going to be talking about Tracy Lynn McShane. She was born.
No clue who Tracy is.
Tracy was born on the 6th of August,
ooh,
1967, in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, USA. This great big.
I'm writing down
land.
These traits to see if I can deduce it before you tell me. Mm-hmm.
Okay,
her
well,
partner.
Here's the deal. Because this is more of a modern day person, not a lot of information regarding her early life and childhood is available at the moment. And currently, Tracy does keep her private life pretty low-key, and there's just not a lot of information about, like, her family growing up and stuff like that. She does prefer to stay out of the spotlight and keep her home life as normal as possible, despite her husband's career as a, here you go, get ready, as an actor, writer, producer, comedian, director, and activist.
Oh, goodness, that's so many titles. Mm-hmm. Okay, keep going.
So, let's set the stage. Not every woman... or, you know, spouse, partner, who marries someone in the entertainment industry, you know, creates a career for themselves. Sometimes they just sort of are famous for being famous. Some achieve fame by just their spouse being, you know, whatever they're doing. But some do decide to strike out on their own and pursue their passions totally unrelated to the spotlight. And Tracy McShane chose the former. That means the second one, right?
Latter.
Choose the latter.
Latter.
I'm so bad at that.
That's okay.
Latter as in
latter.
Later. And created a career very much her own.
Cool.
So Tracy started college at the California College of Arts and transferred and ending up graduating from Drexel University in New York. She received a degree in design and business in the late 90s, like 96-ish, 97-ish.
Okay. We're talking the early Michael Kors era.
You,
I don't know.
You know
I'm,
it.
I'm making it up.
You
I don't know.
Know. After college, she began a career as a graphic designer, living in that New York City late 90s lifestyle. So in 1997, she was living in New York, doing that graphic design thing, she was set up on a blind date with a up-and-coming comedian and actor named
Stephen.
Nope.
John Stewart.
Oh, the couple hit it
so
off.
So close.
And they ended up dating for 4 years.
Oh, that's a long time.
Before John proposed to her through, this is pretty great, a personalized crossword puzzle created with the help of Will Shortz, who is the crossword editor of the New York Times.
Oh, geez.
So apparently the crossword puzzle had all these clues.
I'd like to take back your proposal.
Yeah, sorry. So he like made this crossword puzzle with a bunch of clues and things relating to their relationship and their life. And it was very cute. So they got married in 2000. And that was shortly after Jon Stewart took over The Daily Show on Comedy Central in 1999.
Oh, wow.
He was there for 17 years.
He was there a long time.
Yeah. So they got married. He's doing the show. Tracy began to feel like her life as a graphic designer, while fun and fast-paced, wasn't quite as fulfilling as she had once thought it would be. So she went back to school to become a veterinarian technician.
Oh, that's a fun job.
After receiving her degrees in veterinary science, she worked at the Bronx Zoo before founding Mooma the magazine. Initially, it was founded as Mooma Cafe. It was a hub for families, for like a children's enrichment center, just a place for families to come and learn and have some educational fun activities and things like that. The hub eventually shut down, but the spirit of Mooma continues in Mooma the magazine and website. We'll talk more about that in a minute.
Okay.
So life goes on. Tracy and John welcome their first child in 2006, their son Nathan. And 2 years later, their second child, a daughter named Maggie. So they're doing that family thing. John Stewart's doing The Daily Show. And she is moving the idea and spirit of Mooma Cafe into the website. It now has the website still around, mooma.com. I looked at it. I think that's what it was.
Okay.
Anyway, it has a staff. It's like an editorial team of about 20 people in the current website form.
Oh, that's a pretty big website operation.
Yeah, mooma.com. It's a family-oriented website that focuses on animal advocacy, humane education, and articles, tools, and tips for families looking to do unto animals as we would do to each other. So it's all about kind of like animal rights and healthy living and eco stuff. It's pretty cool. Pretty fun stuff. In 2015, Tracy published a book called Do Unto Animals. It's a friendly guide on how to help animals live and how we can make their lives better. So the idea is that she wanted to help change people's perspectives on how we interact with animals. She talks about virtual pet adoption, caring for creatures native to our backyard. So like, what are the animals in your backyard and how do you, you know, recognize them and take care of them? And how you can help farm animals lead better lives. Just as a kid family oriented book about how can we help animals more. But in the recent years, Tracy and her family have become affiliated with an organization called Farm Sanctuary. It's an animal advocacy, youth education, and animal rescue organization.
That's cool.
With two locations, one in Watkins, New York, and one in Los Angeles, California. And
bi-coastal.
Yeah. And she really like spearheaded this on her own. It wasn't like John Stewart gave her a bunch of money and she did this stuff.
I mean, it sounds like she's got her own thing going on.
Yeah, this was her passion, working with animals and making the lives of animals better.
And that's such a big leap, going from graphic design to vet tech.
Mm-hmm.
Very different.
Yeah, and just a passion for, you know, animals bring a lot to our lives. And,
yeah,
you know, we should try to take care of them. So her family purchased a $4 million farm in New Jersey. And it's used as like a farm rescue home now. So Tracy currently is working on turning that farm into the third farm sanctuary location, and all the proceeds from her Do Unto Animals book goes back to farm sanctuary. So
cute.
She's really involved in making this happen. So they, you know, the Stewart family has had some ups and downs in their relationship if you look at the tabloids, but after ending The Daily Show, John turned down a pretty lucrative deal with Netflix to spend more time with his family, to work on their marriage, kind of work on their animal stuff. So he's kind of started getting involved with more of what she was doing in that.
There's got to be an ebb and flow in careers in general. Yeah. Like, if it's all one person all the time and there's no back and forth, that's really hard.
Oh, totally, totally. So John is super involved in Tracy's work and a really strong supporter. Actually, when her book came out, he had her on the show as an interview.
Aww.
And kind of like, oh, yeah.
She's fun to integrate the two.
You know, and that was a very cute segment. So Tracy currently works with Farm Sanctuary, developing that New Jersey branch we talked about. And she currently resides in New Jersey with her husband, John, their two kids, their four dogs, their two horses, their four pigs, their three rabbits, two guinea pigs, one hamster, one parrot, and two fish.
And a partridge in a pear tree.
So, I mean, that's her story. Like, we talk about better half as the lives of, what are the lives of someone's better half? And hers is, we know John Stewart.
I like John Stewart. Yeah. He's doing a lot with
9/11 veterans. Like, he does a ton for veterans. He does a ton with a lot of that stuff. He does, the comedy, the Daily Show. I watch that all the time. Big part of my life. Big part. And then to think, he has a spouse who's just doing her own thing.
It sounds like there are two people that definitely like to take care of other things mm-hmm. in big ways.
Yeah, and I do. It is cool doing this research to see people, I guess it's interesting because we have different professional lives. I don't just sit around being like, hey, my wife's an analyst at the hospital. She's a project manager. Hey, look at me. We do our own thing. So it seems like when you get into that celebrity status, we sort of forget that people are people.
Mm-hmm.
So it's cool. And I like that. And I looked through the book and the website and I think there's some cool stuff that we could maybe check out on our own.
Yeah. Totally.
So that's this week's...
Let's do it.
That's
like
this
that.
Week's better half. Short and sweet.
Love it.
Stephanie, you said love it. So you know what that means.
The split. Where we take a relationship article torn from the headlines. Dun, dun, and talk about it.
We didn't do the sound effect.
Oh.
Okay, go.
The split. Where we take a relationship. Talk about it. So... Do you remember when we watched that cooking show?
There are a bajillion cooking shows that we watch. So you got to be a little bit more specific.
Next, Food Network star.
Oh, yeah. Okay, yes. Love it. It's that's where Guy Fieri came from. He was the first season's winner.
And I remember having a weird identity crisis watching that, because in whatever season we watched, it kind of came down to two contestants,
mm-hmm.
and one contestant didn't have a great food knowledge or background, but was not very confident in front of the camera. The other person was very loud and boisterous and knew everything, but when it came to technical skill, and the person that ended up winning was the really confident person. And I remember thinking, what does it matter? Obviously, this other person is more talented and skilled. We can see that. There's evidence of that. But they pick the person that's confident. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, it was the not as skilled but confident person beat out the person who was overly qualified, but yes, didn't have that pizzazz in front of the camera.
Yes.
I do remember that. I feel like that happens in my life a lot too.
I feel like it does as well, and I've gotten better at being more confident, not because I like to do it, but because I have to do it in order to.
You saw that and you realized, oh, this happens every day at work.
Yeah, it's more of a social thing than mm-hmm. I don't love coming across as overconfident. It's more of like a skill to survive.
There's a difference between being confident and like arrogant.
I know, and I never want to be arrogant. Mm-hmm. So.
There is that line, but you do a good job, babe. I think you're pretty confident.
Anyway, so this article is called "The Social Advantage of Miscalibrated Individuals."
That sounds really like shady, or like you're throwing mm-hmm. shade at something. Oh, you're just one of those miscalibrated. It's like miscalibrated individual. Like
it's
whoa,
true though.
That's some.
The relationship between social class and overconfidence and its implications for class-based inequality.
This sounds right up your alley.
Say that 10 times fast.
No thanks.
And this was in the Journal of Personality and Social Psychology.
Okay.
It was 30-some pages long.
I feel like the Journal of Personality should be more funny. You know, it's got personality.
And the authors were Peter Bellamy, Margaret A. Neal, David Reif, and Rosemary Oof.
So full of personality.
It's true. Mm-hmm. And it came out like last week, so it's kind of new.
Oh, wow.
And the scale of new things. And I don't remember where I found this, but...
So the title is basically miscalibrated people in social class. There's like class-related confidence issues, and they just figured that out?
Well, the question kind of driving it is... There's a lot of things driving it. The first 10 pages are just kind of theory and setup. But one of the things that they're talking about is that we know in society... inequalities between people and groups is persistent.
Mm-hmm.
And it just keeps happening and happening, and there's social programming and education. There's tons of things. But there's also a lot of theories as to why it keeps happening and persisting.
Mm-hmm.
So we're not going to get into all of those, but if you'd like to, you could get your master's degree in sociology or economics or social psychology. Social work. There's probably a ton behind there. And this is just, in that whole school of thought, one little study that kind of adds a really interesting dynamic to it.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought it would be fun because I feel like it can say something about what you can do in your day-to-day life to get ahead.
Okay.
Yeah. So the first thing that they, one of the first things that they defined is, what does it mean to be overconfident?
Hmm. I don't know. I feel like I know it when I see it.
Well, the whole, you know, like the whole, I don't know what it is, but I know it when I see it.
Yep.
So there's, in the literature, there's a bunch of ways you can define it, but they picked one of the common definitions, and it's overplacement, when people have an exaggerated belief that they are better than others when reality indicates they are not.
I feel this article is professional academic journalists just throwing so much shade
at everyone.
And I'm
like, is it cold in here? I'm feeling a little shade being thrown around.
Burn!
That being said, a lot of the studies we've gone through, well, we've done some meta-analysis, but some of them are just one study with a survey. This is four studies.
Whoa.
So they did four different ones to try to see if their findings would keep happening. And
yeah.
They started with all these hypotheses. But for the sake of doing a podcast, let's keep it simple.
Okay.
So the first study they did was a large field study among small business owners in Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
And so the data set they got included data from 150,000 small business owners Mexico who had gone through this loan application process.
Okay, cool.
So it's this big existing data set. You could look it up, blah, blah, blah. But you guys probably don't care about that. So
I don't know. I love looking through Mexican data sets on small business owners.
I know, right?
It's one of my favorite hobbies.
What are you doing next Tuesday?
Oh, well, the Yucatan has some nice data.
Right, that's what I hear. How is Ishkaray coming up? Anyway, okay. So they had to measure two things. They had to measure social class, and then they also have to measure some type of overconfidence. So what they're trying to get at is people in different social classes, how does that influence overconfidence?
Okay.
Right? Does that make sense?
Yes. Where you come from in your life and your socioeconomic class.
Stuff. Like,
wherever you are. Because that's basically the definition of class. So,
yeah.
You know,
basic. We'll keep it simple.
How that affects how you think about yourself.
Yeah.
Okay.
So to measure social class, they looked at, in the data, people's level of income, their education level, their perceived standing in society. So where do you think you are, like lower, middle, upper, whatever. Mm-hmm. And then they also did a psychological assessment to make sure that these people were okay to be in this data set. So then they did a computerized image matching game. And then... after they did this computer image game, so they took an image on a computer and it was a cat or something. And then they showed you other images and you had to say whether it matched the first image you saw.
Mm-hmm.
And then they did that 20 times. And then they asked people, how do you think you did on this?
Yeah. Pretty good. They had a bunch of cats. Gatos.
So,
is this still in Mexico?
Gato, yeah.
Okay, good. Whew.
So when comparing how people actually did to how people predicted they did, they found out that those with higher levels of income, education, and class thought they did better than they actually did.
Oh, man.
Yeah. So people from higher levels of class were overconfident in their actual performance on this little sample. This little sample of 150,000
people. Awesome. That sounds great.
And in case you're wondering, yes, they controlled for gender. Oh, more shade. So across the way, yep. Okay. So that's study one.
One.
And then they did three others. Two of the studies, they did one study and then they kind of replicated it again. And there's some differences there, but for the sake of simplicity, let's just mush two and three together.
Okay.
So they did a multi-wave survey. And a multi-wave survey is when you send, for the sake of simplicity, you send people one survey, then you wait a little bit, and then you send them another survey.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like when we did that pregnancy thing. Mm-hmm. Remember they kept sending. Anyway.
Oh, so wave, not as in like waves, but like a wave of, I get it. Like in a zombie game, they do waves of zombies. You have, it starts easy.
Yes.
And then here comes four, and then here comes 10. All yeah. the different waves.
Sure.
Stages, if you will.
Stages.
Okay.
And so they sent them one survey measuring one thing, mm-hmm. and then they sent them another survey measuring another thing. So the first thing they asked was basic demographic information.
Who are you?
Who? Tell me.
Tell me about
tell me
yourself.
Your age. Tell me your income.
Fill out these circles.
What is your mom's highest level of completed education?
Mm.
That's important to mm-hmm. me. And then they had people fill out their measured desire for social rank. So where do oh. you want to be?
At the top. Top king of the mountain.
So they did this study with 1,400 people. And then they did the trivia thing kind of again, where they asked them, oh, I forgot the number of trivia questions, but here's this random set of trivia.
Okay.
Guess what they found?
That people who had higher money and education access thought they did better.
Yes, they did.
Okay.
And so they found that those with higher social class thought that they did better than they actually did. But with the social rank thing in there, they found that that was kind of a mediating relationship where when people wanted to be higher than they even were, they kind of had this other level of even more overconfidence.
Uh-huh. Okay. Yeah. Yep.
I am shocked.
Yeah.
Are you thinking of so many meetings you've been in?
I'm thinking of so many meetings and people I've met.
So there's a fourth study. This one I think is super interesting. I've never seen a study set up exactly like this. So this one is with 200. Oh, sorry if you're hearing dogs barking in the back.
Yeah, I hear dogs. This is the first time we've had outside interference on our podcast. Like
we have neighbors that have two smaller, I don't know what kind of dogs they are. I call them the yippie dogs.
Bunch of yippies.
They're really sweet, but every time we see them, they're barking at us, so... Anyway.
Well, there they are.
So there's 236 undergraduate students in this fourth study. And in this study, again, they had people rate their social class and then their family's income and then their mother and father's education levels.
Mm-hmm.
Then guess what else they gave them? The trivia quiz.
Oh, okay.
So they gave them a 15-item trivia quiz. And then a week later, this is the new thing. They had students come back to the lab,
mm-hmm.
and they did a videotaped mock hiring interview.
Oh. So
this okay. is why I bring up the cooking show.
Okay.
And then, from across the internet, they recruited 900 judges.
Whoa.
Yeah, 900.
Not like judges, like court judges.
No.
Just like people to be a judge.
People to be a
people
judge.
People to judge.
Yeah. I mean, Judge Judy could have been in
Judge
there.
Judge Judy, Simon Cowell.
Paula.
Randy.
Katy Perry.
And who is...
Adam Levine.
Howie Mandel.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The lady from The Weakest Link. The British lady.
I liked her.
Anyway, continue.
So all 900 of them got together.
Okay.
It's really funny now that I'm... Okay, 900 judges watched one of the videos and rated their impression of the applicant's competence.
Wow.
So they actually know how competent they are because they've given them whatever. So what they found is that two things. Higher class students were more likely to guess that they performed better than they actually did, mm-hmm. which I feel like we've heard before.
Mm-hmm.
And then they also found that the judges mistook confidence in the students that were from higher classes for competence.
Oh, yeah, because you expect that someone who speaks like an expert is an expert.
Yeah.
That's how old-timey swindlers work. Snake oil medicine and things like that.
You know, I might have misspoke for a second, but on the trivia stuff, there wasn't really a big difference in performance. Okay. Like, higher class people weren't performing any better or worse than middle, lower. Yeah. That their performance levels were kind of the same. The difference was just...
So, depending on your class, everyone basically did the same in the trivia.
More or less.
But depending on your background,
yeah,
you thought you did better. Or worse.
And then the 900 judges were more likely to say the people that were confident, who were the more likely to be middle upper class, judges thought that those people were more competent.
I get it.
Yep.
I get it. So where are you taking me, honey?
So Bellamy, who's the key author, says that you're socialized in this big, great big society to know your class. Mm-hmm. And in your class, you know your place and what you're supposed to do.
Which is weird because I hear a lot about, like, there's no class. We're all equal. We can do whatever you can be. You could work hard and do whatever you want. But it's like, listen, this stuff is baked into our lives. There were a set of rules that were there before you were even born.
And speaking of those rules, the author had a really good quote on that. And so his quote is, in the middle class, people are socialized to differentiate themselves from others,
mm-hmm.
to express what they think and feel, and to confidently express their ideas and opinions, even when they lack accurate knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
By contrast, working class people are socialized to embrace the values of humility, authenticity, and knowing your place in the hierarchy.
Ooh.
Yeah. So there's just differences in class there.
So, Stephanie, I'm feeling some kind of way about this study.
Yeah.
Not necessarily this. I feel like the study's great. But I feel like I see this play out in reverse every day at my work. I work at a community college. And, you know, we have a wide variety of people. But the big... You know, a wide swath of community college goers are usually, you know, lower income individuals and people with trade skills looking to improve either their trade skills or transfer up, transfer out. And historically, community colleges have been seen as places where, you know, if you're not smart enough or don't have enough money or rich enough or whatever to go to a state college, this is where you go. It's not true, but that's kind of like the thing. Anyway, a lot of our students do come from more lower income areas, super smart, really smart, do super well in school, but they have so much trouble because they don't know how to
data says that class has any relation to intelligence
But the problem is that they don't know, is that they don't have that internal confidence. Like me, I came from like a fairly, you know, lower middle class upbringing, and I was pretty smart. I could go into any building at a college.
I think the difference was both of your parents had
degrees. I could go and I'd just be like, hey, someone help me, and I knew how to do that, and I had this like pretend confidence because apparently of my social class. And I just see these kids every day struggling in college and life, and it has nothing to do with their intelligence or their work ethic. It's because they just don't have this confidence that's been almost like stolen from them. And I just feel like that's really unfair. And that sucks. It makes me feel so sad.
Yeah. So the author is kind of saying, I mean, there's issues with this study, certainly, because it was only, I think the biggest critique of the study is you only did a matching test or one trivia thing. And is that really a level of measure of intelligence? Not so much. It's one trivia thing, but... For a study design, I feel like it's fair.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the biggest takeaway is the summary at the end is a beautiful 4-line summary,
mm-hmm.
which I think we should all take away.
Okay.
Confidence is not ability.
Ooh.
However, this is my own take, but if you have the ability, just be more confident.
Yep.
And that's something someone at work actually was giving me coaching on. I asked what I could do better on, and she was like, you need to be more confident.
Yeah. Confidence doesn't mean ability, but confidence is an ability that you can
learn. But you can learn that.
Yeah.
And it's going to help you. Mm-hmm. That being said, my background is in sociology, so I don't want to give off the impression that suddenly if you're more confident, mm-hmm. all of these structural confines and all these walls will come crumbling down and all the inequality in the world will be healed. Mm-hmm. I don't believe that either. However, I do think it's one simple thing we could all try to do that could help us.
And I don't even think it's saying everybody try to be a little bit more confident, which would be good. But I think it's in areas like in my area of work, it's like, recognize that confidence does not mean ability, and that someone who doesn't come across as confident is ruled out. Just because someone doesn't come across as super mm-hmm. confident doesn't mean anything.
The other part is, I think because I used to come from sales, mm-hmm. I always red flag really confident people. Because in my sales background, in sales, you're taught to be very confident.
Yeah.
But I have had a lot of experiences where I was like, you're confident. Don't know what you're talking about.
Well, it was almost like because I also have that sales background. And the sales guys who were super confident, who were really selling, it would be like, yeah, I'll sell you anything. And then they'd come back to the office and be like, hey, I just sold this thing. Can you do that? And it wasn't awesome. But yeah, I see that. But yeah, I think the big takeaway from this for me is get to know someone's story before you really judge them, because if they don't come across as confident, you know, some people just really aren't confident and they don't have skills. But it sounds like a lot of people who don't come across as confident just
might just have a different background.
Were never in a position that would let them have confidence, and that's really sad. But I think we can change our attitudes towards that. So I am excited about that.
For sure.
Stephanie, this was a beautiful article. You moved me.
I feel moved.
And your confidence has been getting better, and your coaching has been working. Because now, I don't question you about anything ever.
That's the danger of being too confident. I want to be so confident that no one says anything.
Yeah.
That's not cool.
Yeah. Well, Stephanie, thank you for sharing that with us today. And when you said 32 pages, and you're like, well, the first 10 pages, I'm like, yeah, this girl actually read that thing, the whole thing. So, way to go. Kudos to you.
It was a good article.
Well, I think it was a great article, and you shared it with us with such grace and finesse, and I'm really proud of you.
Confidence.
You did it. So, this has been Two Peas in a Podcast. We are coming at you every Tuesday here on your favorite podcast outlet. Thank you so much for listening. If you could, give us a like and a rating and a review on whatever podcast platform you are going to be doing that. But if you feel like you don't want to, or for some reason forget we mentioned it. Also, shout out to all our Big Pea Pod fans out there. We've been doing these little cool videos, kind of teaser videos for each episode. Make sure you check those out on our Facebook page. And we'll be back next Tuesday. Now, Stephanie, anything else?
We hope that after listening to this podcast, you learn that you can be confident and like each other very, very, very much.